Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 117, recorded June 11th, 2012.
Greetings, everyone.
Hello.
We're trying to perform some technical wizardry. Did you hear that boom in the background? That was technical wizardry.
Yes. In fact, that was a technical wizardry boom.
It was indeed. There. Maybe that'll hold together this time.
We'll see.
Okay.
Okay,
so what kind of a show do we have today lined up for us?
Well, we have Charlie in North Carolina, and Tony in New York, and Martin from, I don't know.
Oh, he's from Belgium.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Okay, you didn't tell me that.
I found out subsequently, okay. Sorry.
So Martin from Belgium, not
At
Martin,
least he's
Mr.
in Belgium.
Man. Okay.
I guess there's a difference between being from and being in. I don't know if there is a difference in this case.
And Mick and Eric from Daytona Beach
but
in Florida.
Mick's from Carnforth.
I know, but I think everybody knows that by now.
Well, the new people don't.
Okay, new people. Mick is from Carnforth.
UK.
Yes.
Okay.
There we go. Okay. So you had an announcement about our podcast with Ken Jones, though, didn't you, before we get started?
Yes, I did. On the Pet Tech podcast, which I put on the last podcast show page, but it didn't actually come out until after the podcast itself was recorded, and so I didn't mention it auditorily, and now I am doing so.
You mentioned it how? Not auditorily.
In written form. It was in written form. So I'm mentioning it now auditorily.
Okay.
In addition to my original written announcement. And if you go to Pet Tech, do a search for Pet Tech Podcast, or on our main website page, you can scroll down and you can see the icon there for Pet Tech Podcast and click on it and go there and you can get there.
And hopefully like it.
Yeah, we did an episode on filtration with Ken, and I think it went pretty well, and it was fun to do.
Yes,
and
so I hope if you're feeling a little clogged up, you can go find out about filtration.
Okay. I don't think it was that kind of filtration.
Okay, if your fish are feeling clogged up.
Okay. But it was cool, so go listen to it.
Okay. So should we jump in with Charlie's email?
Yes.
Okay,
let's.
Charlie from North Carolina, who is talking to us about red cherry shrimp.
Yes.
And this is an ongoing conversation, right?
Yes.
You want to remind everybody?
Well, basically, he was having some issues with his shrimp in that they weren't eating all that much, and one of them didn't seem to be settling while the rest of them were. But now, they are. Some of them have begun, at least, to reproduce, because he has some tiny little red cherry shrimp showing up, around 20 of them. And since then, his shrimp have become more interested in food, which I think is interesting.
Huh.
I don't know what the connection is.
Since the baby's arrivals?
Yeah. I couldn't tell you why that would be, but interesting, certainly.
Yeah.
And he's wondering about shipping and packing small live animals like invertebrates such as Daphne or red cherry shrimp. And you want to tell us more about what he had to ask about that?
Well, he says, I was wondering about your experience with shipping and packing small live animals, especially invertebrates such as Daphne and red cherry shrimp. I'm not sure about the water volume to use. What?
Deja vu. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay.
What type of container, bag, or screw-top container, or the ratio of air to water? I have experience shipping aquatic plants, but I am new to shipping animals. There isn't a whole lot of information out there on the topic, and I don't remember hearing an episode about shipping. If there is one, let me know, and I'll check that out, which we have not done, so you have not missed anything.
Right.
Yes.
So, I'm going to give you guys the lowdown. Everyone, in general. The lowdown on how to do that, basically.
How to ship stuff.
Well, I'm going to tell you one thing that I have a lot of experience shipping certain things. A lot of experience shipping plants, a lot of experience shipping critters such as microworms, grindleworms,
Walter worms, vinegar eels.
That kind of thing, yes. But extensive experience with that. Much less with things that are waterborne, you know, completely aquatic creatures like red cherry shrimp or Daphnia. Much less, although I do have some experience doing that. So,
now, do we know what the current post office regulations are?
Confusing?
Yes. That's certainly very true.
They can be confusing. It depends from one post office to another.
Or even, one post office worker to another. To another. Yeah.
I've had post office workers who don't like it if you mention water at all. Other post office workers who don't care.
Some of whom ask you if there's anything liquid, perishable.
Potentially hazardous.
Potentially
fragile.
Hazardous, fragile. And some of them who don't ask you.
Yeah. And I think it partly depends on whether they know you or not and all kinds of things. But anyway, let me backtrack a little bit and say, first of all, before shipping anything, just make sure you understand your laws of shipping things within your state and out of your state or province or country or wherever you happen to be. Mm-hmm. Just make sure you know
the laws of the point of origin and the laws of the destination.
Which are often quite different. For example...
And confusing.
They can be confusing, too. And many of them are regulated locally, like on a state level, rather than the level of your country. Some of them are both, and they are different. For example, when we lived in Hawaii, shipping things out of Hawaii was really pretty easy. We had to go through the inspection at the Department of Agriculture, but once we did that... and that was usually pretty easy, and they got to know us really well, and they'd see us and say, oh, hi, here you go, and, they'd do a little inspection on our plants, and we'd pack them up, and they'd put their special tape on, and we were good to go. Shipping things out was easy as pie. Getting things to ship in was really hard, which makes sense, considering the ecology of Hawaii, that they want to be a lot more careful about what comes in and goes out.
Right.
But, just to say, that's one example. So make sure you understand what those are, first of all. Okay. Now, let's assume that you have determined that whatever you're shipping is legal to do so. Okay, first of all, post office doesn't like insects. And they don't like soil. And there are some other things they don't like. So you have to be really careful about that kind of stuff. But let's say you're shipping things like the worms that we've done with grindle worms, Walter worms, things like that.
Microworms.
Okay. First of all, they are pretty resilient, but you need to think of, you don't want them to leak. For example, microworms and their culture material, they stink.
They do.
If there's a fresh culture, it's not too bad, but if a culture's sitting there in a bag for several days and it leaks and it's wet... It's
stinky.
It's not water, but it's wet and it's stinky and...
It's like mushy oatmeal.
Yeah, so it does have water in it, but it's not pure water.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it can be gross and you want to make sure it doesn't leak. So for almost anything, whether it has water or not, double bagging is usually a good idea. Although, breather bags, you should look up breather bag. Corden produces these things called breather bags. They're really cool. And if you're shipping something with water in them, then you should look into those because basically they are made out of a special material that takes in oxygen and releases carbon dioxide at a rate where it's taking more oxygen in than carbon dioxide. It puts carbon dioxide out faster than it takes it in, and it takes oxygen in faster than it lets it out. So we shipped most of our things out of Hawaii with those, and they were cool. So you can think about those. Okay, so breather bags, you can look into that. They have their advantages. One thing that's counterintuitive about them is that you need to fill them all the way up, because the gas exchange that occurs in these bags doesn't work very well if there are bubbles.
So, in a normal bag, you would leave air up at the top.
Right.
But these you don't.
In most bags, you want more air than water. Because, air holds a lot more oxygen in it than water does.
But these ones, tell us how they work with the gas exchange.
Well, basically, oxygen goes into them, and carbon dioxide goes out at a higher rate. So twice as much oxygen comes in as goes out, and twice as much carbon dioxide goes out as comes in, or something like that.
Works. So they breathe.
They breathe.
They're breather bags.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, they're interesting. They are contraindicated in certain cases, like if you want to ship an air-breathing fish like a betta or a gourami, they need to be able to come up and breathe. So you wouldn't use a bag like that in that case. And there are certain cases where you don't need them. I mean, shipping plants, they don't need.
These are more for critters.
More for critters. And so
fish and shrimp and whatnot.
Right. And
especially the whatnot. We love to ship whatnot.
And then there are people who don't use those bags and ship in just normal bags, and it works fine. It's just there are different things you need to be aware of. Now, did we talk about insulation?
Let's talk about insulation.
Insulation is our friend when we're shipping things. It's very important. Yeah, insulation such as bubble wrap or even Mylar bubble wrap. We've used quite a bit of that.
Mm-hmm. Styrofoam.
Anything that gives dead air space. You know, styrofoam is great. You can line a box with styrofoam. You can get a styrofoam cooler at a dollar store and then pack it into a box and use newspaper to make it nice and snug and tight inside the box. Several ways. And then you can use heat packs, cold packs inside them, depending on the temperatures.
And that, of course, is just to make sure that whatever you're shipping stays at a comfortable temperature.
Right. And in general, I have found that for the types of things that I ship, which I can't speak for things that I haven't shipped as much, but the types of things that I ship in my climate, our climate, we usually don't need heat packs or cold packs except in the extreme part of the year. So mm-hmm. a month or two in the winter and a month or two in the summer.
And we don't use cold packs very much at all.
No.
It's mostly just heat packs.
Right. And
things from freezing.
Exactly. But it depends on what you're shipping. There are things that need it.
It depends on where we're shipping to as well. Right. Like if we're shipping to Maine in January.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Minnesota.
Or if we're shipping to Southern California, you know.
Right.
Things change depending on that. So, but it is something to be mindful of. And we've noticed that the heat packs are, it's because they're in a limited oxygen environment, they rely on oxygen for the chemical reaction that occurs that allows the heat to be produced. They, when they're in a box or an envelope or so on, they don't produce as much heat and their reaction is slowed. So the heat pack might be rated for 10 hours, but it'll actually go longer because it's not getting as much oxygen.
It's not burning so fast.
Right. Basically, that's the way that works. So that's something to be keep in mind. Whatever you're shipping, double bagging is usually a good idea. Maybe not with the cord and breather bags, but with other bags. And also make sure you keep corners out as much as you can. That can be useful. So you put a bag in one way, and then you put the other bag on top of it the other way. And so corners
are
eliminated.
What do you mean the other way? The first bag, you twist up the top, double it over, and seal it up with a rubber band.
Right.
That's so that's like the top. You put that top in the bottom of the next bag.
Right.
And seal off the other end the same way.
Right. And that can help eliminate corners because corners can be bad if you have multiple organisms that will jam themselves into corners. Mm-hmm. And that will sometimes stress them out. It is important for many creatures like shrimp to have something to grab onto.
They don't want to just float out in nothingness.
Right. Now, if I mentioned that before, I apologize. We're having some major recording issues tonight, so if I say something that I already said, that's why. It's because I'm not sure what I said already.
Yeah, in fact, just for a little behind-the-scenes peek, this is the third time we've tried to record this section.
So bear with us, ladies and gentlemen, if we seem redundant. There you go. All right.
Or frustrated.
Yeah. Now, I hope I've covered a few things that will be of use to those of you who might be interested in shipping. And Charlie, let's hope that that's helpful for you. Thanks for the question. It's a good one.
And again, hopefully we made some sense.
Yes.
Okay, moving on. Tony in New York. And he's just still talking about his little tanks he's been trying to get cycling, right?
Right.
Yes. And he's giving us an update. He says the main tank still uses ammonia quickly at 4 parts per... Is that parts per million?
Yep.
Yay! I got the abbreviation. 4 parts per million per day, so that's great. Nitrite seems high. I expect it may start to fall any day now. The small tanks are a little finicky, but I'll let you know when they are cycled. For science!
Exactly. Thank you.
The second 1-gallon tank has the Java moss in it, and it's very happy. And, oh, it's happy to be dosed with ammonia every day. It likes that, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
It's even starting to grow out of the water already.
It can be an ammonia sponge, that stuff.
It's good.
It's in good conditions, and it sounds like it is.
And Tony's been looking into getting assassin snails. So he's been trying to check out the regulations about that in New York. Which is a good idea.
Indeed.
Like we were talking about earlier, know your local laws.
Yep.
He says, I did receive some cautions about taking every precaution to avoid the escape of the snails or the release of eggs into the environment. Good information to have. I'm sure I will move in this direction. Recently heard an episode of Aquaramania on this topic as well, and he said it was very interesting. He sent us a link to that one.
Yeah, and we'll put that up on the show page. Thank you for sending that.
So they're mostly common sense precautions, but sometimes I think common sense precautions are the best one to remind people of because
they can be easy to forget.
Yeah, there's a stark lack of common sense in many areas of the world today. And I think you're going to take our break right now, so we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax.
Okay, we have a new contributor this time, Martin.
Our first contributor from Belgium that I know of.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Welcome, Martin.
Mm-hmm. And he had an interesting question. He says, your podcast is one, if not the only, truly interesting aquarium podcast around. Thank you very much. And I would like to listen to it through Stitcher. Can you somehow get your podcast to show up on Stitcher? I think it would help spread the podcast in addition to the convenience of listening to the Stitcher app. I have never heard of Stitcher before this.
Well, I looked it up, and it is apparently a pretty cool app that allows you to listen to podcasts anytime, anywhere. Mm-hmm. On a smartphone or, you know, mobile device, thing like that. So I have applied to release the podcast through Stitcher. So those of you who use Stitcher, you can look forward to that.
Haven't heard back yet.
I made the application the other day, so
we'll keep you posted on that.
Mm-hmm. And thanks, Martin, for the suggestion.
Hopefully. You know, if anybody else has any other suggestions of where you would like to be able to find us, let us know.
Yeah, because we'd love to spread the word.
Okay, we have some emails from Mick now, and he actually said he had some problems downloading the interview with Ken Jones. Now, does he mean when we interviewed Ken or when Ken interviewed us?
When Ken interviewed us.
Okay.
The Pet Tech Podcast link that I put up.
Okay. He said it comes up as a movie file.
That's weird.
So he has to wait to listen to it through the laptop. So did anybody else have issues with that? Let us know. Maybe we can try to figure out what the deal with that is.
Yeah. I do know you should be able to get that through iTunes. So if it was a problem getting it from that link, you can try from iTunes, and that should...
Because Ken Jones has his stuff up on iTunes?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that should help.
Probably his website you could get it on too, right?
Well, that was his website.
Oh, that was the link that we put up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Never mind. Unfortunately, Mick had another problem trying to get shrimp.
Oh.
I know. It was the bee shrimp he was trying to order again. He says, the parcel was sent out to the wrong address, and by the time it got to me 2 days later, all were dead.
Mm.
That's so sad.
It is.
I have, however, got a full refund from the seller, and now am expecting a new delivery of white pearl shrimp next week.
Pearl shrimp are cool, too.
Yeah. So. Don't know what the problem with the bee shrimp.
I don't know. Bad luck with bee shrimp. It's neocaridinia collapse disorder.
I was just thinking that, except I was just thinking, gee, it must be the same problems that all the beehives are having. And Mick has some news about his cribs for us.
Yes, cribs being the West African cichlid, not like perambulators or baby beds.
Oh, no, yes. Not that kind of crib.
Yeah. They're small cichlids from West Africa for the uninitiated in cribs.
Nor is he playing cribbage.
Right.
Which I don't even actually know what cribbage is, but I know it's something that people play.
Okay, well, we'd better change the subject then, because I don't know either.
I think it's like field hockey, but with cabbage.
Okay. Somebody's probably going to send you a hate mail for that one. But it won't be me, because
no, somebody tell me what cribbage is. I don't know.
Okay, well,
you don't play it in a fish tank, though. So
we're talking about cribensis,
yes,
which is the former scientific and now the common name of these cichlids.
It's not their scientific name anymore?
Not anymore.
Well, what's their scientific name now?
Pelvicricromus pulcher, I think.
They should have stuck with cribensis. Okay. He says he moved his three remaining juvenile albino cribs, one male and two females, into a new tank, and they'd been hiding out since then. One female had scooped out a hollow under a bogwood, and to his surprise, the other day a whole clutch of little swimmers, around 30, appeared. He says, the ones that spawned are only around an inch and a half, and I thought they were too small for breeding. Interestingly, these new Fry F2s are a mixture of around 50-50 albino and normal patterns. The F1s from my original adult pair were 100% albino themselves. I wasn't prepared for Fry, so I had to feed them on a makeshift soup of decapulated brine shrimp eggs and my vitamin mixture with tank water. The Fry seem to love these and are doing quite well. I have ordered a starter culture of Walter worms for when they get a bit bigger.
Okay. Well, I thought it was really interesting about the albinism not working out in the generally expected Mendelian fashion.
Now, tell us what the generally expected Mendelian fashion is.
Okay, well, usually, with a lot of creatures, and I don't want to overgeneralize here, but with a lot of creatures that I've bred that have albinos, things like white mice, convict cichlids, whatever, quite a few of them, if you have an albino, that means it has two sets of the gene for albinism. It needs two. It's a recessive gene.
It has to have two to show up.
Yeah, two pairs of it to show up in its phenotype, in its visible form.
Okay.
It can carry albinism, one copy, but the other copy of the normal coloration is dominant, and so
that is what will show
that individual looks normal, but carries a copy of the gene. And so if you cross two individuals that have one copy each of albinism and one copy each of normal color, then you'll get a certain proportion of albino babies.
Save
in
it.
Theory, 25%. Now, it often doesn't work out in practice that you'll get 25%. But you will get somewhere close to that if you have a large number of Fry. If you have 100 Fry, you might have 22, or you might have 10, or you might have 35. But, you know, you're getting close,
right?
Because it's a probability thing. It's
okay.
Not exact proportion. Anyway, that's how it works. And so if you have two albino fish, they have copies of the gene only for albinism, so they can't pass on normal coloration.
Because they both have to have two
copies of
copies
it, and they
of
don't
it.
Have any copies of anything else that would give them normal coloration. And so
they don't
you,
have any, like, backup information stored somewhere from their great-great-grandfather?
Apparently not. But this is weird because this is clearly not what is happening in mixed case. So there could be all sorts of things going on. This could be a polygenic trait in cribs. It could be
what's
that
polygenic?
Where they have more than one allele that takes care of that trait. It could be that this is a different mutation. Could be that albinism works differently in cribs. There's a lot of things
that are possible. A different mutation
like leucism, which reduces the amount of dark pigments, but not in quite the same way albinism does. Or hypomelanism, which reduces the number of dark pigments. So the overall effect is you get a lot of lighter pigment.
So,
you know, but it's not albinism.
Okay.
There are different things going on. So I don't know what's going on, but it's interesting.
So what you're saying is that mixed fish, what one would expect to have happened is that he had two albino fish who then produced albino Fry, and the third generation you would have expected to also be albino because those fish should only have copies of the genes for albinism.
That's what I would expect based on the species I've worked with that have been albino, yes.
But what actually happened was he had two albino fish who then produced the second generation, which was albino, but then the third generation had some albino and some normal.
Right. So the genes are obviously working differently than I would have expected. So
where did all these normal children come from?
Yeah, interesting stuff.
Okay, Mick has a suggestion for Anne.
Uh-huh.
Now, she had rams.
Yes.
Who keep having Fry, and then the Fry just keep all disappearing and dying.
Right.
And Mick says that he knows a top UK dwarf cichlid breeder who always uses infusoria on the ram weight on his fish as the first food.
And he means rams specifically.
He means
yeah.
rams.
Yeah.
Well, since the Fry are so tiny.
That's the way to go. Thank you, Mick. That's a great suggestion. And let us know if that works for you. That sounds like a good idea.
One last thing. Mick sent us some videos.
Yes, he did. A video of his female crib and her Fry.
Mm-hmm.
And then a video of his Merry Widows.
What's a Merry Widow?
They are a type of live bearer.
Oh.
They're not so common in the hobby in the U.S. I don't know about whether they're more common or not in the U.K. I'm sure people keep them in the U.S. But they used to be more popular. But they're interesting little creatures. They remind me a little bit, just in a vague sort of way, of eastern mosquito fish.
Why do they call them Merry Widows?
That's a good question.
I was just thinking they're really black
know.
And red.
They
were
no,
purple.
Not black and red. Well, they are charming little fish, so you should check out these videos. We'll have them embedded on the show page.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know we talked about... We also heard from Eric in Daytona Beach in Florida.
Uh-huh.
Since we are having such issues with this equipment...
Yes.
...tonight, we are going to forbear and do that next time so we can get all these technical issues in order because the machine's been really awful.
Yeah, it's been messed up. But Eric in Daytona Beach is a new contributor.
And we're very happy to have you, and we're not trying to slight you at all.
No, but we'll catch you next week. Yes. And I'll probably email you in the meantime.
So, good night.
Everyone, may the fish
be with you.
And may our computer work better next week.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.